Hello and welcome to the Totally Scottish Football Show in association with Paddy Power. The Premiership is back, it's early doors, and we still don't know how good anyone is, but I reckon Celtic and Rangers are in a league of their own this year. Can Hearts, however, humble the champions? Will the Buggies burst Gerrard's bubble? Later on, we'll be focusing on Falkirk as the League One side plan on an immediate return to the Championship. How many goals will Hibs concede this week? And could Cosgrove be contemplating Calcio? I'm Andrew Slaven, and alongside me in the studio, someone who would never leave Aberdeen for Rome, it's JJ Bull from The Telegraph.
Hello.
Hi, JJ. And joining us also in the studio, he's more Bucky than coffee, he's more Coppa than Calcio, from Coppa 90, it's Finn Marks.
Ciao.
I wrote down as a possible alternative to that. He's more serious than Syria.
Oh, that's very good.
A bit of drama in the women's game, guys. It was a heartbreaking exit from the World Cup in France for Scotland in the summer. 3-0 up against Argentina with 50 minutes to go, and it finished 3-3.
It's the first time we've talked about this. It is, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
It was awful.
It was. And it was a penalty, wasn't it, that had to be retaken. And we all know what happened.
Which I think it's a rule that they're subsequently softening now, or slightly not enforcing
it
strongly.
They changed it straight after. Scotland.
I just love that there was still time enough for Scotland to go out of a major competition because of that rule.
Yep.
Heroically.
Horrible. Absolutely horrible. It's the first time I've seen my girlfriend watch football and want to boot the hell out of the television. But anyway, it turns out the day after that game, there was a team meeting where many of the players were reduced to tears after being told some home truths by Kerr and the coaching staff. The coaching staff had been out having a few drinks with Shirley Kerr beforehand.
They had a meal.
Yes, yeah. A meal with a few drinks.
Which could mean one glass of wine, who knows?
Yes.
Still.
What do you think about this from a management point of view? Going for a meal, by all means, with your coaching staff and throwing fuel into a fire and saying this worked, this didn't work. But then to go back and get the team together on the same night, she has admitted she would do things differently.
Yeah, well,
Shirley Kerr.
Well, she'd admit that as the boss of several employees, well, effectively what they are, she wouldn't have a few drinks and then do a... Imagine that. Imagine your work. Your manager takes you, like, you go out to the pub for a few drinks and a meal. And afterwards he goes, right, I'm going to do your performance evaluation now.
Like, but in the wake of a massive deal having gone south.
A shooting they've been working for months. Yeah. It's totally unprofessional. I mean, like, it absolutely is. I wasn't there, so I don't know exactly how that went down. And I know that, like, Nicola Doherty's come out and said that the whole squad's behind Kerr. Mm-hmm. But, there, I mean, I've heard mixed things about how the squad responds to Shirley Kerr, and I've had my criticisms of the way she managed the team during the tournament as well.
I kind of want to know what the home truths are that they're talking about, because I would say as well, I think there were maybe some questions that could be asked of the playing squad, but I also think Shirley Kerr's got quite a lot to answer for as well. And just in terms of, I thought watching the Scotland games, we were tactically so naive in a lot of the games, especially the Argentina game.
So late to react to everything.
But that was it.
And they were hanging me into that game, yeah.
We were knackered. 3-0 up, 14 minutes left, absolutely knackered. And you think even the most basic tactical change is take players off and bring on players that can just shore that up and see the game out. And she didn't make any changes until Argentina got it back to 3-2, and it was a double substitution in the 86th minute. It's like, what's that going to do to change
the
game?
But foul for them.
As much as it really boils down to a group of coaches went out and had a meal and had alcohol, and that's what's spurred out into the media, that the coaching staff have had alcohol.
It could be any amount.
Exactly. And we don't know it. You know, they might have been fine. It's just that someone's upset. This might be a bad moment for Shirley Kerr, but she is still someone who's taken Scotland to
a team manager.
Yeah, national team manager. It's one of those things where we love to just smash someone when they're right at the top. And I think before any real details are clear, we have to be really careful and just still support the team.
I don't know. I think it's a really weird one, because I agree that, like, you don't know how drunk anyone was. It could have been... I mean, the definition of drunk is having consumed even like a drop of alcohol. That's this weird law.
Breathalyze them.
But then KR said that it's an elite performance environment. So in this environment, people are going to get upset. Home truths will be said because you're going to say you should have done this, it shouldn't have happened. Clearly, it is the wrong time to debrief people on a night out. I don't think for a minute she's like slugging a bottle of juice onto the stage. You go, I got another thing like that.
You're listening to the Totally Scottish Football Show in association with Paddy Power.
Kilmarnock and Aberdeen face off on Saturday. Both were involved in the race for third last season, but this campaign has proven stressful for fans of both clubs. We're joined now by Barry Richmond from KillyFC.com. Barry, we spoke last season several times. Everything was going so well, top of the league at one point, but it's been a pretty deflating start for you guys, hasn't it?
Yeah, we're calling it the summer of shambles, really. I think everything just kind of started falling to bits when there was a big Steve Clark-shaped hole in the door, and it's pretty difficult to fill it. It took a wee while to get somebody new in, and that was us behind the ball straight away. So it's been difficult to try and catch up, I think, and that's been obviously showing on the park.
What do you make of the impact that Angelo Alessio's had so far? Can you see any changes on the pitch and the style of play yet?
No, definite changes, yeah. We used to win. So I think, to be fair to him, I'm not sure if he was 100% right up on what he was coming into. The guys obviously operate at a much higher level, albeit he was only an assistant manager. I think he's had a lot more to do here than he actually thought he was going to. You know, Steve Clark had total control of everything, and I'm not quite sure whether Angelo knew he was coming into that or not. And that, coupled with the fact, you know, we lost our CEO at the same time as well, and the chief scouting guy left as well, and you know, suddenly he's been a lot to do, and we're behind, you know, in terms of time and getting things together as it was. So for him to then impart everything, all his knowledge, etc., onto the players and trying to create some major change, it must have been very difficult for him. Obviously, we get papped out of Europe pretty quickly. It just wasn't happening, you know, and he's kind of reverted now to what we're playing like before. And I think he's going to change things a bit slower now.
The result against Connors Quay came so early in the season. Do you think that the kind of sluggish start to the season is almost like a bit of a hangover from that because it came so early?
We should have been able to play that game with no manager and win it. Yeah. I can't put that down. You know, there's obviously been a bit of confusion, etc., but I'm putting that down to the players. Players did great last year, absolutely fantastic, but we lost 10 over the summer and we're down to a bit of a skeleton squad. But the guys who are left, I mean, I had every faith in them, and they're good players, but they just didn't seem to pull it together. And your game against Rangers, we played really well. Can't just be up for those games, obviously. Didn't look great against Hamilton in either game, although, you know, we managed to pull through and get through in the cup, but we can only hope things will gradually improve.
Well, that's the thing, because it's still really early days, isn't it? But how much time do you think Kilmarnock fans can give Alessio at the club if things don't dramatically change?
Some of the fans want it. I'm going at 10 o'clock that night, first day. That's how long they were giving him. And there's, you know, they're giving all this stuff about, oh, you know, we're better just getting rid of him now and that'll be the end of it. There's no point in getting in here if you know he's going to be rubbish. I don't understand that at all. Everybody's got to be given a chance. The guy's got, it's not all down to his CV, obviously, but he clearly knows what he's doing. Mm-hmm. It's just a matter of, I mean, he might not have been aware of how much he had to do, and you can see the frustration in him trying to bring players in, and for whatever reason, they're not wanting to come.
That's one of the big problems. It seems to be that he's short of players. He says he wants a left winger, a midfielder, a striker. And from what I've seen of Killy this year, I wonder whether he wasn't quite sure at what level they're at, because a lot of the stuff he seems to want them to do, like switching the play, isn't quite working.
When you look at the guys that he's used to coaching and what they can do and their capability, then he comes here and there's a look. And, you know, he has looked into it. I spoke to the guy myself and we had his watched, etc. And he looked at all the videos. He knew the guys who used to be here. Not that that's any good, but he knew everybody who had left during the summer. With those 10 players leaving, you know, that was a huge gap to fill, and we're just not much of a squad there at all. That's building back up now again, and hopefully, I mean, I know he's still looking at two or three other players, especially a striker, but everybody's looking for one of them, so it's not just going to happen next week or anything like that.
This appointment was heralded as quite, you know, exciting. But it's not been a great start.
No, it's fine though. It's all right.
Yeah, I know. But I'm obviously aware that we're expecting too much, aren't we?
I don't think I've talked to a single person who thought Killy would be the same level as they were last year after Clark. So I think there was always going to be a drop off. The Connors Quay thing is a shock. the players weren't good enough on that one night they lost 2-0. It was a stupid kind of red card thing from Finlay and the penalty. And Finlay's been awful all the season. So a few of them look a bit just kind of, I think you said hungover earlier. Like they're just not quite sharp enough. I went through all Achilles' games in White Scout, all of them from the season so far today. So like example, against Hamilton, they were decent enough, right? Mm-hmm. So they started well. They had all the ball. They had 78% possession, which, I mean, possession doesn't mean anything, really. But they had all the game. And Hamilton were just sat back deep against them, got this random goal, and they got their goal by Alston punting it like 80 miles in the air. The boy takes it down, comes across, and then they score that way, right? And the second goal was another launch, and they come away, and the ball through the middle of the box goes through past the goalkeeper. It's kind of a bit of a stramash, right? But Killy had all the game. XG, they were something like, I think it was 1.89 to 0.83, so they should have won it. I think it's 2-1 or something like that. But really, Killy should have won that game. Mm-hmm. And on average, they would win if they played it another 10 times, or something like that. To suggest that Alessio might be a shorter time is funny to have in like these first two games.
My main point was, you know, Alessio comes in with an incredible CV where a lot of people are expecting to see certain things, but it is just hard when the previous manager has done so well and everyone expects too much. So it's hard no matter what's going to happen. But up against Aberdeen, Finn, how do you think they're going to fare? Obviously, Aberdeen not having the best of starts themselves either, and themselves being out of Europe as well.
Yeah, I don't know. I find this one actually a really difficult one to call. Yeah. On paper, you think that Aberdeen should win it in terms of like the league standings and stuff. And I'd say I have seen enough of Aberdeen this season where they've been good to suggest that I think they've got more than enough for Kilmarnock to handle. But then Killy be looking to build on the Hamilton Cup result, and it's that slow and steady progress they just want to make. And I think the fact that they're at home again for the second week, you know, I mean, Aberdeen did really well actually to have the cojones to get out of that tie against Dundee,
because it didn't
look like they were going to, and that had been true to form for what they've been playing like the last like 3 weeks before that. So this one's kind of difficult, and of course they're always kind of tempestuous games. Like there was the game last season where there was three Killy players were sent off in the last game at Rugby Park last season, so it could be interesting.
But Aberdeen always, for the last season now, have had an absolute genius of a man up front.
Sammy Colgrove, Ballon d'Or.
Yeah. And what's this story about him being linked to Serie A? I know it's been quashed now, but why was there such excitement last day? Aberdeen.
Have you ever said the word quash when it isn't related to a transfer rumour or like outside a studio?
Yeah.
It's one of those words that exists only in like the football world.
I would still say it in the pub though.
Would you?
Yeah. I've quashed that.
Did you say? Oh, I heard that Sammy Cosgrove rumour's been quashed.
Yeah, when I'm smoking cigars with my friends in the high mountains.
I love those kind of words that you only have in relation to football. Like, if you've got a lot of money to spend in the transfer market, it's only known as a war chest.
Oh, yeah.
And that is the only time you use that word.
Did you hear about Aberdeen's war chest?
The thing is, it was probably there because it's Cosgrove, quashed, it's close.
Do you think
but
it's,
anyway.
And in the background. Anyway, yeah. Well, this is some media outlet in Italy has linked Lazio with Sam Cosgrove because he's very cheap compared to what you'd normally get for a player who scores 100 goals every 5 games. Lots of championship clubs are interested in him too.
I was trying to figure this out, and I was like, I don't know if it's somebody in the Italian equivalent of the Daily Record has had a look. They're like, oh, Lazio needs a striker.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
they've looked at like the Europa League qualifying rounds top goal scorer, and Sam Cosgrove's going to be up there.
Genuinely, because that's the kind of thing that, not that I would do that for work, but you go around, you look for stats, you look for anomalies, and when you spot them, you look into it a bit more. Lovely white scout.
I just love the thought as well of Simone Inzaghi and Lazio just being like, do you know, I need a right proper 90s centre forward, big target man, good on the turn, get him in at Lazio.
Get his brother in to coach him. There's nothing I can teach this boy, he's got it all.
It's nice to have a break from advertising, so here's some classical music. Nice. At Paddy Power, we thought football shirts could use a break from advertising too. That's why we've sponsored Huddersfield Town shirt without a logo and started the Save Our Shirt campaign, where any football team that Paddy Power sponsor will be, well, unsponsored. Don't you wish we weren't on your shirt too? Now, let's get back to the music. Paddy Power, enough of the nonsense. 18 plus, begambleaware.org.
On Spotify, smart speaker and podcast platforms everywhere, this is the Totally Scottish Football Show from Muddy Knees Media.
We recorded the podcast before the Europa League qualifying first legs on Thursday, but this lot are never off the clock. So to discuss Rangers' trip to Legia Warsaw, I gave Finn a call.
First leg, Legia Warsaw 0, Rangers 0. It was a bit of a chess match, this game, to be honest. Going into it, Legia kept 5 clean sheets, so Rangers knew they weren't going to give much away. And it was pretty cagey, a couple of exchanges in the first 10 minutes, but largely Legia were pretty happy to let Rangers just have possession and sat off them quite a lot in the first half. A couple of little half chances for Rangers. Legia's main tactic seemed to be to try and draw fouls on the wings, and then their Georgian midfielder, Gavilia, would try and whip in a free kick towards the big men that they had in the box at set pieces. I think despite that, it was a pretty assured and mature performance, I thought, from Rangers, particularly in the first half. Their shape was good and Morelos was leading the line quite well. And then in the second half, it kind of changed. Legia came out much more. Rangers had to work much harder. McGregor pulled off some pretty good saves. Rangers tired as the game went on, but still they held their shape pretty well. Morelos probably had the best chance of the second half. He was put through by Arfield, but their keeper Majeki made a really good save. I think in the end, Steven Gerrard will probably be happy with a 0-0 scoreline. I think particularly for how much better Legia were in the second half. And before the game, Gerrard said in his press conference he thought this tie would be really close and go down to the wire. And I think that kind of bore out tonight. There wasn't much to separate the sides. But I think Rangers will probably feel confident that they'll find a way that they can break down Legia Ibrox in the return game.
He thinks it beyond the goalkeeper. And once again, Otten Edouard with a wonder goal. The Frenchman stepped up and coolly called it beyond Oscar Leonard. And Celtic have 2 goals to the good. It's Celtic 2, AIK 0.
And Celtic were hosting AIK in Glasgow. JJ drew the Celtic straw.
Yeah, it finished 2-0. Celtic look pretty good for the next round here. I'm not sure their opponents have really enough about them to cause too much trouble. But then, you know, it's these Europa League games can be awfully tricky sometimes. The first half was kind of frustrating that Celtic couldn't really get at them. But the big players turned up on the night. James Forrest scored a goal. The keeper should maybe have saved. He sort of powered it into his own net. And Odson Edouard stepped up with an absolute pinger of a free kick in the top corner. Fraser Forster was in the crowd. He signed on loan for the entire season. That's an immediate improvement over what they had in goal. Scott Bain, well, he's injured now, isn't he? But doesn't seem to be able to level. And Craig Gordon is Craig Gordon. So it's good that Fraser Forster's in. That'll help them be a bit more solid in Europe. Bolingoli Mbombo. He played at left back. So Lennon decided, we went with a 3-man defence tonight. Played Julien as well. Mbombo played, got booked, but he had some better touches than I've seen him, especially in the second half when he was attacking. He's getting forward and his touch seems to have improved. Maybe he's got some confidence in him now. So Celtic looked good for the second leg. Weren't too troubled. Should be fine.
The final game of the Premiership weekend is a Scottish Cup final rematch. Celtic host Hearts on Sunday afternoon, and it's been almost a decade since the Jambos won at Celtic Park. It was Michael Stewart with the winning goal in a League Cup quarter-final in 2009. Celtic knocked out of the Champions League. They made hard work of Dunfermline in the Betfred Cup because they needed extra time.
I thought they'd come out and absolutely batter them. I thought they'd destroyed Dunfermline because, like, whenever they've had a bad European result, they've come out and taken it out on whoever's been there next. Mm-hmm. But I really didn't expect that from Dunfermline. I mean, I was watching the score all the way through. I was like, when are they gonna?
And even because sometimes, you know, a team will go through like a bit of a rough patch, and if it's a team like Celtic or Rangers or whatever who are more used to, especially at home, once they score, they're kind of like, well, that settles the crowd and all stuff. So when Celtic went 1-0 up, you're just like, oh, here it comes. They'll end like 3-0 or something like that. And fair play to Dunfermline because they didn't let it go.
Yeah, I think Dunfermline need all the credit for taking them to extra time.
Did Neil Lennon take them out at the end of the... When did he have the players on the pitch talking to them? The very end of the game, isn't it? See, that's an odd move. He's making weird...
He's gone full Phil Brown there.
That's risky because you can lose a dressing room. And the stuff with Scott Brown after it. So yeah, Scott Brown... accidentally liked a tweet suggesting that Lennon's maybe not the best. They meant to be pals, aren't they?
I think that probably was a genuine mistake. Yeah. He was.
Let's assume it is. Yeah, it's still quite funny. Yeah, just, and off the back of that as well.
He just wasn't having a good night that night, Scott Brown.
That's weird from Neil Lennon to be straight away doing these FIFA celebration team talks on the pitch. Players won't like that.
Well, away from the game, Celtic legend Tom Boyd is being investigated by the SFA for comments he made on Celtic TV about referee John Beaton. I guess we remember last season there was a lot of hoo-ha online about John Beaton and a refereeing performance against Rangers, wasn't it? But anyway, the question really is, do we expect club broadcasters to be neutral about referees?
I don't think it's not so much that, because you can feel the whole point of like club broadcasters is that you will be biased, obviously, to in favour of your team. Yeah. But I think it's more the nature of what you said, because what you said was about John Beaton specifically, he'll probably be welcomed down his pub tonight, which is a reference to John Beaton being allegedly, or whatever you've got to say, pictured in a Rangers supporting pub after that game. I think it was more because it was something else that he said, which is actually probably where he might be pulled up, which is he also said, apparently on Celtic TV, we've not played well, but once again, a decision from a referee may have cost us in this game, meaning the Dunfermline game. Hopefully we'll go on and beat not the 10 men, not the 11 men of Dunfermline, but the 12 men. Yeah. And I think that's the point where because in the rules it's
conspiracy kind of stories.
It is, and I know Boy probably meant it as a joke, but when you have someone on your official club channel essentially calling the referee bent, that's not acceptable.
Like, yeah, so of course, absolutely.
But it's been referred to the compliance officer. What does the compliance officer do? Does she give him a 2-game ban from Celtic TV? Like, has he got to stand in the corner of the studio?
It goes in the referee tombola, and then they come up with some. Yeah, he has to move to Kenya for 2 weeks.
I don't know, or maybe it'll just result in a 2-game ban for Alfredo Morelos.
Interestingly enough, let me quash something else. Good, yeah. Let me quash something else today. Do you know Beaton has actually awarded more penalties to Celtic than any other club in the last 3 years?
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me.
He's given Celtic 7 penalties over the last
conspiracy.
3 years. What about Hearts? We spoke to Amoroso Let's It Run last week, who said that the Hamilton game at home would be a real acid test for Levine and whether he's under pressure. Getting hammered here, it wouldn't help Levine as much as maybe Hearts fans might expect a defeat.
They haven't beaten Celtic for a long time away, especially. And they had a couple of results where I think it was like 3-0 and 5-0. But then the last three times Hearts have played Celtic, including the cup final, the game's finished 2-1 to Celtic. So there's not been a huge gap between them. And I just think the way that Hearts play, they know how to play to frustrate Celtic. Mm-hmm. You never know. Like, I just think with the way that things have been, the way that Celtic have been playing recently, they were cagey against Dunfermline, and you could sense the nerves watching the Cluj match. I think if Hearts can kind of ride out that early 20-30 minutes potentially, and they're still in it, or it's still goalless, you don't know.
They obviously got a pretty good result against Motherwell in the Betfred Cup.
Hearts are in desperate need of being good very soon. They need to bring in some players. There's a player we were just watching on Y-Scout before we came in who they've been linked with, who would help them win the league, Riot, by all accounts.
yeah, we watched this guy who Man City have just signed, Ryotaro Machino. You can see the headlines now. He could be joining, possibly. Craig Levein had a few nice things to say about him, saying that Hearts fans will enjoy watching him and other Scottish clubs will enjoy watching him too. But the last time I heard Craig Levein say nice things about a potential player coming into the club, David Vanacek? What happened to him?
He was honking.
Honking, what a word.
So Naismith could be back for this game. Is needed.
And John Suter.
But then I don't know if you want to disrupt it. Well, Levein often goes to like a back five. It is a five when he plays against big teams. So they're playing a four at the moment with Halkett and Berra. But he'll want to find a way to put Suter in that team as well. But it looks like Halkett is the best defender now. It'd be better that it misses out if he keeps with the four.
Big game in Paisley this Sunday. St Mirren taking on Rangers. Jim Goodwin's St Mirren are the favourites for the drop, but it's played 1-1 at St Mirren Park for them this season, as you well know, JJ.
Because they beat Aberdeen 2 weeks ago.
Yes.
Well,
what do they need to take from that game as well, if they're going to take anything from Rangers?
What do they need to take? They need to take defensive acumen, goal-scoring ability, a lot of heart and fight. Jim Goodwin, I think, is quite clear early on, knows what he's doing, and St Mirren look all right. I mean, Rangers is a big ask, to be fair, and you expect more of a defensive setup. I mean, against Aberdeen, it was a 4-4-2. I think they were quite deep, but they got the win, as you do when you block everything. I wonder whether he changed the shape a little bit to try and deal with what he's got. Andrea's been okay so far.
Yeah, I remember the defeat to Hibernian in the opening day. I remember St Mirren looked quite assured. had a definite game plan and really stifled Hibs, who are kind of known for their, you know, attacking ability. So they seem like a much better outfit, and with one of the smallest squads as well in the division. So I think they've brought in a few more players now, but who knows?
Not seen Yuri Djorkaeff's son play yet, though.
No, we haven't. We talked about that, Owen.
Neither has Yuri Djorkaeff, because he was there for one of the games. That's in right, the stand, yeah, with his family, and wasn't on pitch at all.
I wonder if he paid to get in.
Goodwin says that people think that they're soft, but that they showed against Aberdeen that they're anything but soft. I think Goodwin's a bit of a hard bastard. Isn't
I don't think like Stephen and Paul McGinn are particularly soft. Yeah. Like, they're hardy boys. Just last season, they just got done in so easily, and it was a little bit of lack of confidence, probably. It's so key, isn't it? If you don't think you can get back into a game and your season's unravelling and everything falls apart. But they seem to be able to defend a bit better straight away, which is obviously very important. Mm-hmm. But again, it's Rangers, right? And Rangers look really good this season. They are scarily organised. They've got great depth. And when you play against a team like that, everyone just sits back. You have a nice, a lovely, our favourite, the low block. You'll sit back, maybe a 4-4-2, probably a 4-4-1-1. Try and take advantage of counter-attacks down the channels. But they're going to have hardly any of the ball, I would say. Maybe 20%, 30% of the ball. And that'll be mostly pumping it up the pitch.
Rangers are really benefiting from the first time in years and years, probably close to 10 years, they've got a settled squad, a settled manager, settled backroom staff. Mm. Everybody knows what their role is, and they've spent the summer, I think, quite cleverly changing up the squad in a lot of areas where they've added strength and depth and quality throughout the squad. So even, you know, they've signed Hellander at centre-back, mm-hmm, and he can't get a look in, but it's not because of anything bad. It's just because Katic and Goldson have been rock solid in all the games so far. So, and that can only be a good thing if you've got that level of player competing to get into the starting lineup.
Well, oh, yeah, you say that, and then you're right in having the competition. And when Hellander comes in, like he did against East Fife, and he bags a goal.
Yeah, exactly. And I thought the game against East Fife, Rangers were, it was just interesting to see, because that's, they were just very professional. They turned it into a training game. And what was interesting was, I think after the match, Steven Gerrard was kind of singing the praises of Joe Arabo particularly. And I thought Arabo and Defoe, both of them, their professionalism was just, there were a couple of players, fringe players, that got into the team. Mm-hmm. Gerrard rested a lot of players. And
Stuart even got a game, yeah.
And Andy Halliday, who had a dreadful game at left back. And none of them did anything to really push the first team. Mm-hmm. But Defoe and Arabo, like, the professionalism was incredible. It was like, it doesn't matter if they're playing in front of 50,000 or 500. Like, they'll still have that level of A game that they bring to the situation.
Yeah, that's Steven Gerrard's doing. Like, you have to try and bring that change of mentality to the club and try and instill this winning mentality. Make sure that they are always up for the battle and not conceding these late goals like we talked about before, the 87-minute thing. Mm-hmm. They have two 11s almost that they need to carry them through, and they weren't far off it last season.
Yeah.
Really think they're right up for it this year. They'll do in a few teams.
The only other thing I was going to say was that it's not just the players that they've brought in who are playing well, it's the players that have been there for maybe two, three seasons now who are really coming onto a game. I think you look under Gerrard's tenure, the likes of Tavernier and Ryan Jack's, yeah, been fantastic, yeah, this season, yeah, really impressive.
He's kind of like an 8 now rather than a 6. That he and seems to have got way more to his all-round game, which must be another bit of coaching with Gerrard.
Definitely.
Listeners, did you know that we've got a new website? It's thetotallyfootballshow.com, and it's got the very best from all of our podcasts, plus some red-hot original content, including this week, an interview with Carlos Carvajal, who explains what went wrong at Sheffield Wednesday, who he nearly signed for Swansea, and why he thinks managing in England is paradise. Plus, there's a feature on the joy of Mario Balotelli signing for Brescia, and why Sheffield United are definitely the happiest team in England. Find out for yourself at thetotallyfootballshow.com.
This is the Totally Scottish Football Show with Andrew Slaven and JJ Bull.
Falkirk are the runaway favourites for League One, and Craig Turnbull from the Falkirk Herald is here to tell us why. Craig, Falkirk, of course, finished bottom of the Championship last season, but they've signed a ton of players this summer. Who's come in and how have they looked so far?
Yeah, as you mentioned there, they have signed a ton of players, I think 15 in total. They've always had this idea of a two-year plan. Ray McKinnon mentioned it as soon as the club was relegated, that it wasn't just about getting back to the Championship, it was getting back to the Premiership. Mm. And you can see through the players that he signed that is a kind of a target he's made with the players in mind that he's bought, the likes of Connor Salmon, who was at Hearts, who's played at a high level. And you can see already on the park that, you know, he is sharp and he's powerful and he'll cause teams problems at this level. The likes of his strike partner, Declan McManus, as well. He's a loanee from Ross County. He knows the league very well. He was player of the year in that league with Morton in 2014-15 season. So he certainly knows his way to goal. And then you look at the type of players they've brought in midfield, at Charlie Telfer and Aidan Connolly, two creative types, and certainly could play at a higher level. And just the whole kind of the whole team looks like it would be challenging for not just kind of League One, but, you know, the top end of the Championship. So got a great spine, like Sakami Bell, good experienced goalkeeper. Gregor Buchanan's been brought in, and Michael Tidzer as well. There's a lot of players that Ray McKinnon knows and trusts. And it's certainly, from what I've seen so far, a team that is more than capable of winning the title and also doing well next season if they do get up and start challenging for the Championship.
What's the kind of take from people who follow the club about Ray McKinnon? Because he joined last year, it couldn't keep them up. Does anyone kind of blame him, or is there any blame attached to him for Falkirk going down last season?
Well, because he's a manager, he has to take some blame for his part in Falkirk's relegation. But what I would say to that is he was dealt a very poor hand. He came in around about this time last year, and to be honest, the team was in disarray. It was a team that would struggle probably to win League Two, never mind stay in the Championship last season. And they were just, you know, desperately trying to kind of cling on to the coattails of other teams until January so that he could bring in a whole team. And that's what he did. He pretty much just got rid of all the kind of players that had been brought in and, you know, brought in a new team. But even in January, it's difficult at the best of times, a window. So, you know, trying to get the right players in the state that Falkirk were in at that time, it was always going to be difficult. And to take it to the last day, I suppose you have to give some credit to McKinnon and the team for that, that they weren't kind of cut adrift. When it looked like at some point that they might well be.
What's happened then in the summer? Have Falkirk came in a bit of money? Because we're all aware of the New York businessman Mark Campbell coming in, but that's not set in stone yet. There's still stuff to be done for that to be finalised. Where have the club kind of been able to back Ray McKinnon over the summer?
I think it's from a kind of variety of sources in terms of, you know, money from Will Volks. He moved to Cardiff for about $2 million, so they've got some money from that. They've had cutbacks in terms of staff and operation team, and they've always said that, you know, they would back McKinnon to try and get them back into the Championship and also the Premiership. They've kind of thrown their weight behind that, and they're a club that could run with no debt or anything like that, so they've always been in a fairly strong financial position.
What is the kind of deal with this Mark Campbell guy? Because I read that there's fans that are concerned about him. I don't know anything about him personally. Who is he, and what's going on with that?
Well, it's very difficult to kind of pin him down as to who he actually is. He did a kind of fans Q&A, and I went along to that, and he said all the right things. He's a 46-year-old English businessman who's based in New York, intends to come and be in Edinburgh if everything goes through. I don't know too much about him, to be honest. He says that a lot of his Google history, you can't find much about him because there was a messy divorce and he had to get that all purged, so that's why you'll not be able to find too much information about him.
Does he have money?
And I guess,
is he planning on doing some sort of massive funding bit where he takes him up to Champions League in a few seasons?
Well, this is it. I mean, it's difficult to know where his money's coming from because there's not that much evidence of there being money there. I mean, he's not really answered those questions, I think, that Falkirk fans would like to know. Where's the money coming from and what's kind of in it for you? And he tried to kind of answer those questions with a Q&A that night. But again, I think it just opened up more questions as to why he wants to take over. He promised kind of Falkirk fans the wish list that they'd all want. They all want the academy back. They want the fourth stadium built. They want to be a top six Premiership club. But, you know, it all sounds a bit too good to be true. But they're now going through this due diligence process, which is kind of expected to be finished by August 31st. The club are remaining tight-lipped over that process, and so we just have to kind of wait and see what happens there.
We should mention Brechin City, because that's where we had our first managerial casualty of the season.
A death!
Yeah, JJ. Barry Smith sacked after three games into the campaign. City are bottom of League Two, having lost all three games. Smith was in charge since November, but couldn't stop them dropping down from League One. So back-to-back relegation for Brechin, and if they stay bottom, that could be three relegations in a row.
It's a pretty precarious position they're in when they were back in the Championship and they didn't win a single game.
Yeah.
And I think it's just, it's a lot more fraught for clubs right down at the bottom hovering over that last place in League Two since the relegation out of the league was introduced. And you've seen what's happened in recent seasons to Stirlingshire and Berwick Rangers, and I mean, I doubt any time soon they'll be coming back up the way because of where those clubs are. And you see the teams that are ready to come in. Like, look at the way Cove Rangers have started the season coming in and they've absolutely blitzed it, you know. It must just be so scary if you're supporting a team that's at that level of the league. They're on just a downward trajectory.
Well, there's so many clubs in that lower leagues, though, that this is one of the problems with like Highland League teams. There's quite a few decent ones who have not huge amounts of money, but you look at Cove are doing really well now, right? Yeah. Fermartin have a bit of money behind them and they'd want to try and push up that kind of league. And there's only one spot. And if there's loads of teams that just crash down, this is where they end up. If it ever changes, there'd basically be the one playoff, because that playoff is huge, yeah.
Well,
a huge event.
Just sticking with Smith, he had to play for Brechin against Forfar in the Cup last month because the club didn't have enough players. He retired 9 years ago. But in a similar vein, 50-year-old Clyde manager Danny Lennon brought himself on in the Glasgow Cup on Tuesday night against Celtic's Colt side, but Lennon retired 11 years ago.
Have you seen this?
It's fantastic.
Yeah.
It's just, it's interesting because he's 50 years old, Danny Lennon, and he's a bit of a silver fox, but he looks way older than 50.
Do you think he was preparing himself for this? Because I've seen pictures and he's got flowing grey hair now, almost like a kind of...
I bet there's an Amazon documentary. They've got heaps now.
But do you remember when he was...
Danny Lennon.
Do you remember when he
fighting
was...
Fighting fit.
Do you remember when he was at St Mirren and it was just that short kind of army hairstyle, jet black? He looked a bit like a head teacher. Now he looks like a classy European centre mid.
He looks like he steals your wife at the beach.
Yeah.
I saw Old Firm Facts tweeted,
right.
He looks like the guy in charge of Chernobyl in the show Chernobyl.
Absolutely, he does. Have you ever, a more handsome version. Yeah, if you've ever seen Chernobyl, producer Charlie brought this up with me earlier on. Dyatlov from Chernobyl, who was like the chief engineer. That's who you look like, Danny, except you're a much nicer man.
I mean, could Dyatlov come on at 50 years old to play centre mid for Clyde?
No, could Danny Lennon prevent a nuclear meltdown?
Time now for the latest odds with our man Lee Price at Paddy Power. It's St Mirren v Rangers. Last time they met, Stephen Gerrard's side were awarded 4 penalties. What are the chances of that happening again?
Yeah, I still can't believe it actually did happen. We don't think it will happen again, though, this time. It's, in fact, odds on that no penalties are given in this fixture, 2-5. You can get 13-8 there, 1 or more penalties. Or for 4 penalties again, it's 150-1. A real long shot, unlike a penalty.
Very nicely. The last two Hibs games have provided 7 goals and then 8 goals. Are we getting a goal fest against St Johnstone on Saturday?
Ooh, optimistic bets this weekend. Maybe. The odds are obviously quite long here. To get over 6.5 goals, i.e. 7 goals or more, is 25-1. If you think there'll be 8 goals or more, it's 80-1. And you really want to knock yourself out and say 9 goals or more, it's 100-1.
Ross County currently sit third in the table and they've got a very winnable game on Saturday. How about a top 6 finish for the Staggies?
Interesting. If you'd asked a few weeks ago at the start of the season, of course, Killy or Aberdeen would be massive favourites to finish third. But Ross County have had a brilliant start to the season and the odds have shortened on them finishing the top 6. It's now just 11-2 and we think it's more likely than not they'll be in the top half.
Hamilton host Motherwell at 3 o'clock on Saturday. Local Lanarkshire derby, guys. These sides pretty evenly matched in their meetings last season. Tight affairs, not much in this. It's anyone's ball game.
Hamilton are a weird one. So Brian Rice wants to play nice attacking football and make them more open. He's not actually really doing that anymore. They're playing a bit more like how Martin Canning had them. It's not the same shape. They set off them and they launch the ball forward and then push the team up to try and gain territory. It's very much territory based. And then they try and get something out of it. And I like Motherwell this season.
So is that going to work for them against Motherwell?
What, punting the ball miles in the air and chasing it? Probably, like, it's a dice roll, isn't it?
Motherwell are playing a lot more football on the deck these days.
I always think the team who keeps the ball on the deck and passes it about wins. And it always annoys me watching teams who don't do it. I just don't understand why you'd launch it. It doesn't make sense to me. So that's what you'd expect to see from these two teams. I don't know who's going to win, but I'd expect Motherwell to keep the ball on the deck. Hamilton will probably not do that because it gets them up the pitch. And Motherwell should have more of the ball, so then they have to launch to get out of their hole.
Motherwell might be reeling after being knocked out of the Betfred Cup at home to Hearts. They've obviously been thrashed by Celtic, but they started that game really, really well. So you think this is a game that they really need 3 points in. They obviously always need 3 points in all games, but this is a game... We're getting the point across of almost similar to Celtic needing a big performance and a big win. Motherwell need that.
I think they do, yeah, definitely. They'll be desperate to get what would be their first win of the Premiership campaign. I don't think they've had a very easy start. Away to Livy on that pitch and then at home to Celtic, obviously. So, but I think they'll be so up for it because it's the derby match, and to get your first 3 points of the season would just kind of set them on their way. I think they're not far off. And in the League Cup, they were brilliant in the group stages. Like, just some of the attacking football they had, I think they'll have too much for Hamilton.
There's a big link of Jack Hendry from Celtic actually going to Motherwell. Do you think that would go a long way to shoring up their defence? Because they've obviously got Declan Gallagher at the back as well, who did so well for Livingston. Do they need another defender?
Jack Hendry's another difficult one. Don't know how good he actually is, because he was signed as a potential star. And then,
from Dundee.
Yeah, from Dundee, because he was very good at Dundee. But also, he's young, but he didn't look... I don't think he's great at Celtic. Who knows? Maybe he needs to go to a smaller club where it's not so much pressure. But he would have pressure at somewhere like Motherwell.
Jack,
like,
Hendry isn't that young. He's 24.
Oh, well, that's why I'm wrong. Yeah, he's way older than I thought he was. Jack Hendry's 24.
Yeah.
Oh, well, no, it's not a good move.
Hibs going to... Well, no, sorry, they're hosting St Johnstone. Paul Heckenbottom given a right scare by Greenock Morton in the Betfred Cup, but eventually winning 5-3 in extra time. 9 goals conceded in 2 games by them. It's wide open, their defence.
I think it's been a trend for a couple of the teams in the Premiership, I think, at the moment. It's like they're actually really good going forward. I think St Mirren are a really good example of that. Motherwell are really good as well. Hibs, at the expense of... it's kind of like the Kevin Keegan school of tactics. It's like, you might score 5 as the opposition, but we're going to try and score 6. And I'm like, give me goals, man. That's what I want to see.
Sign me up for
it
that.
Does mean some of the defending is horrendous. So some of the goals they lost in the Morton game, it's almost like you could imagine the Benny Hill theme tune playing underneath it. It was comically bad. But having said that, like, Hibs do look exciting. I think the Rangers game was kind of a bit of an anomaly anyway. They tried to play football in the middle of the park, and Rangers have just looked so good, especially in midfield. So I think you can't really tell much from that game. But, you know, the likes of Scott Allen, I think he's been decent since he's come in. That's 2 goals, 2 assists in 3 games. And also, man of the match against Morton was Glenn Middleton, who made his debut. And I was saying this last week, I think he'll be a real player for them. He's very direct. He's quite exciting. He can actually switch between wings as well.
And that's what they lose with Boyle being out of injured as well.
Yeah, 100%. So I think this will be a really good game. I'd be shocked if St Johnstone kept a clean sheet.
St Johnstone, as we said, have not turned up this season in any way like we thought they would. Well, I thought they would, because we're used to them being robust, but they are not. And they still don't know how to score goals yet.
Something I found out, though, in
Please
preparation for this, St Johnstone haven't been defeated at Easter Road for 7 years. But that came 7 years ago this weekend.
Oh!
Ooh!
Well, you heard it there.
Who knows?
They're still linked with Stevie May, who seems to get better the less he plays for Aberdeen. Do you remember him being this sort of player that he was, the more you don't actually see him on the pitch?
Yeah.
But maybe he'd be great. I don't know. God, it'd be nice for him to be good at football again.
Saints are just desperate for a striker. That's the problem. They need someone, and they've actually also been linked with Ollie Shaw of Hibs. It would be good for Ollie Shaw to get away, because he's not really breaking through at Hibs. He's always been kind of brought on from the bench, and I really liked him last season. I thought he showed real glimpses of an eye for goal for a striker, and he scored quite a few important goals, I think.
Thing is, it's a weird team to go to if you're a striker, because you want to have chances so you can score.
Yeah.
And I don't know how many he's going to get apart from crosses.
That's a good point.
So you think a player like Shaw, you look at Lawrence Shankland as an example of like a younger player who's done really well at a lower league, because obviously he's done that in a lower league. But if you went to somewhere maybe lower down, he'd score a lot more and be a lot better for him. Because if you're St Johnstone, they don't try and play over a high line. They mostly get crosses in from the wings. There's no like through balls trying to beat a high defence because no one really plays with high line in Scotland.
It's the service. You're basically saying that he needs, you know, a certain amount of service to get chances in front of goal. Would he get that at Saints?
I don't know. It was interesting this week as well because I think Tommy Wright came out the other day and when he was talking about his wingers, so Michael O'Halloran and Matty Kennedy, that he wants to see both of them get at least a dozen goals this season. So it's interesting that...
But they're wingers. They play outside, don't they?
They're good players too. They're really good players.
Kennedy already has three this season, but I don't know if he's kind of got O'Halloran and Kennedy confused with like Robin and Ribéry, like, you know, both of them cutting in and scoring these goals. But I mean, it'd be amazing to see.
Well, finally, Ross County welcome Livingston to Dingwall. The Staggies were knocked out of the cup by Partick Thistle, but they're unbeaten in two games so far in the Premiership. I really like the look of Ross County.
They've looked to really have ridden the coattails of their promotion from the league below.
Coattails. There's another studio buzzword.
Absolutely.
I fancy County for this one just purely because last season Livingston only won once on the road the whole of last season, and that was the third game of the season or whatever it was away to St Mirren, who were abject. And I think it was even still Alan Stubbs that was there at that point. So they're not good on the road, Livy. And I just think from their first game of the season, they were really impressive, I thought. And they're really well organised. I think they'll be gutted that they went out to Thistle, because the chance to get into the quarterfinals, and when you're playing lower league opposition and Thistle have had their own problems this season, I think they'll be really disappointed and eager to get back into the swing of things.
I'm really hoping Lyndon Dykes starts again for Livingston. He played for Queen of the South last year and signed a pre-contract with Livy. So he's joined them and he scored against Forfar in their 2-1 win in the quarterfinals of the Betfred Cup. If he starts again, he could be that kind of link between midfield and attack for Livingston, because he can be really wily. He can hold up the ball. He's a really tall player, but he's absolutely miserable for winning a ball in the air. So he's much better at receiving at the feet. And he took his goal well, and hopefully he continues that, just because the Queen of the South connection. And I like Queens.
Problem with these games is that it's too early in the season to really know how good these teams are.
Yeah.
It's hard making predictions because you look like an idiot no matter what happens, especially me. My predictions are usually wrong.
Ross County 1, Livingston 2. Yes! I'll be the idiot. Thank you to JJ, thank you to Finn, thank you the Little Kicks for providing our lovely theme song. We appreciate it a lot. We're back next Friday ahead of, Rangers v Celtic.
You've been listening to the Totally Scottish Football Show, a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, please email sales@muddyneesmedia.com. Keep up to date with everything across our Totally Football network at The Totally Show on Twitter, and make sure you check out our brand new website too, thetotallyfootballshow.com.